Okay, ladies and gentlemen, it's 10 o'clock in the morning, and we will soon start our next session, which is the ALAC work, part one. We have a very long agenda today, so if you could please get ready to take your seat soon. Do you all have your name cards? I noticed that we have John Laprise, who has a very well-executed name card, and two John Laprises. We have the twins. Identical twins. I hope the recording is still off at the moment. Anyone else with name cards missing? Or you forgot yours upstairs, you will not have a voice. You need a name card. I cannot identify you otherwise. Okay, I'll make sense of that. We got Vanda. Tijani, you have your name card? Ah, perfect. This makes it easier when putting them up. Do we have the full ALAC here? Are they coming in? Oh, no, Jean-Jacques is here. I thought you weren't. I was looking for you. I think the first item, ad hoc working group on the transition of U.S. government stewardship on iron function, we can both do together. It's, I think, one of the things you're involved with. That will be... So we've got the first. We've got the second is yourself and Evan. And Evan is coming in a second. And the third one is Evan. For those people following remotely, we will be starting in a couple of minutes. Just a few people have gone out to get their name card, I think a bit of coffee as well, and there's a bit of a queue outside, so just a couple of minutes more. And before we start, I can also welcome people who are in what one calls the audience, but of course you're full participants here. So if you wish to comment or add, we have a flying mic that can go around the room. I notice a few members who are here. Good to see them. Mohiro, good morning. Let's have the recording on, please. Good morning, everybody. This is the session of ALAC work, part one. We're only Tuesday in the week. It's 10 o'clock in the morning. We have quite a full agenda today on our first session. First, we'll have an update on the at-large working groups. Then we'll have an IDN update, so internationalized domain names, when we will be seeing Sarmat Hussain from the IDN program. Then afterwards, we'll have an update on compliance with Maggie Sarrett, who will be joining us, and finally a discussion with the 2015 nominating committee leadership. That will take us from now until, I think, 12, so 2 hours of important discussions. Just as we start, Gisela Gruber was here a moment ago, wanted to make an announcement, but of course she's just gone. Interesting. I think I shall make the announcement on her behalf. She has shared with me that when you are wearing your headsets, which are these things, and speaking at the same time, apparently a feedback loop starts, and the interpreters are having problems understanding things because there's whistling going on. So if you could please, when you take the microphone, take your headsets off. Don't put them around your neck because they're even closer to the microphone, but take them away from the microphone. As with every at-large and ALAC session, all of our sessions are interpreted. So if you could please say your name when you start speaking. And at the same time, of course, we will use the rule of putting your name card or your tent card up if you wish to be put in the queue. We also have remote participants that are present. If you have any questions, remote participants, then you can type them in the chat, and staff will be monitoring the chat for questions and comments. Now, since we have everyone here, I think we can start immediately then with the updates and reports from the at-large working groups. These are updates and next steps, so they're meant to be an interaction between the ALAC and the working group. I know that many of you are part of those working groups, but some are not. So the first one is about the at-large ad hoc working group on the transition of U.S. government stewardship of the IANA function. As you know, we have two members of the at-large community that are on this IANA coordination group, wider worldwide group that will deal with the IANA stewardship transition. Those two members are Jean-Jacques Subrenat and Mohamed El Bachir. Jean-Jacques Subrenat is with us, of course, and I thought perhaps handing the floor over to Jean-Jacques Subrenat to provide us with an update of the working group's activities. And as I'm the interim chair of that working group, I'll also be jumping in on occasion. So Jean-Jacques Subrenat, you have the floor.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, everyone. This is Jean-Jacques Subrenat. I'd like to start with a sense of the timeline for the ICG, because I think that will have a determining factor on many other aspects. So for me, the timeline is a lot of internal work going on now, and then in January there will be the contributions or the input from community to the ICG. And it is on that basis, and on that basis alone, that the ICG members will sort out and clarify and perhaps put into shape the proposals, which will then enter into a plan. And the plan, in turn, will be sent to the NTIA through the channel of the board of ICANN. So it's not that the ICG is not busy now. It's simply busy on perhaps more internal and organizational matters, such as getting an independent secretariat to work for it, things like that. So I think the most crucial part will actually start in January and will continue until we are able to finish that plan and convey it to the NTIA through the ICANN board. There was some discussion about when the task of the ICG would actually end. I think it's still a fairly open question. It's round about the autumn. There is a timeline which is published, so you can refer to that. I won't go through all that now. But just to give you a sense of the fact that there are very important political steps which will have to be gone through, such as the NTIA receiving the plan and then reacting to it. And in my personal opinion, there are two ways for it to react. One is you got this and this and this wrong, so you have to correct that. Or, no, sorry, it's not acceptable, so we cannot accept the plan. And there again, in the case of non-acceptance of the plan, I think, but this is a personal view, that there are several possibilities. One of them being you have to start again or start at a certain stage of the work. In saying this, I want to be very careful to impress upon you that there is no plan B in the ICG. We are not thinking of going back and starting all over again or having our work refused. Of course, we will do our utmost for this to meet all the criteria set out publicly by the NTIA. But we must recognize that it is a tough job because there will be so much input from so many various parts of the internet community and the ICANN community. So right now there has been a discussion, and I think it's not entirely clarified yet, about the transmission of the ICG's plan to the NTIA. It is the strong feeling on the part of the membership of ICG that this plan, once it has been written out and approved by the full ICG, it is sent to the NTIA through the board of ICANN, and it is the hope and expectation of the ICG that then the board of ICANN will not amend or modify the content of that plan. On the other hand, it seems to me that some members on the board may have a different opinion and consider that if the plan has in fact to go through the board of ICANN, well, they would be completely in their role and therefore entitled to modify what they thought needed to be amended or improved. I personally, as just one out of the 30 members of the ICG, will not give any pronouncement on what solution is better, because that entails many considerations, and I don't have the time to go through all of them now. I just want to make you aware that there is such a discussion just now. And you remember that when the ALAC received the visit of the CEO and president of ICANN, I had asked him to be aware that the ICG was keen that the transmission to NTIA through the ICANN board would not entail any modification of the content itself. And I had asked him to make the other members of the board aware of this position. This morning, I was, as a former member of the board of ICANN, I was at our traditional meeting of the former directors of ICANN with the current members of the board of ICANN, and that aspect was touched upon briefly, and that's where I realized that some members at the board level perhaps had some questions about how to proceed. So this is not a source of worry. If I'm mentioning this, it's for the sake of clarity and transparency. But I'm not especially worried. It's simply that we have to be aware that there is such a discussion or that there are such questions. So much for timeline. The other things are less consequential or less important. We are in the process of choosing a firm which would provide secretarial services, what is called the Independent Secretariat for the ICG. And as I said the other day, and I'm sorry if I repeat this for some of you, the notion of independence is, of course, important. It will take its orders only from the membership of the ICG through its chair and two vice chairs. But we must be cognizant of the fact that the secretarial function thus performed will be paid for 100% out of the ICANN budget. Any other aspects to the work we're doing in the ICG, I will now leave to questions or comments on your part. I think that would be more efficient than my rambling along on our little stuff. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Jean-Jacques. Olivier Crépin-Leblanc speaking. And just before we go into questions, I thought I would complete your intervention about the ICG with the developments of the cross-community working group on IANA naming-related functions, which is the group of the ICANN operational community that deals with the domain name part of the three contracts that we are speaking of with regards to the IANA contracts. The working group met yesterday to a really packed out room here in Los Angeles, and a few steps forward were taken with regards to the composition of the process, if you want, moving forward. No real actual work on the work itself took place. There was a lot of procedural time taken. There was a presentation of some work which was undertaken by one participant already, I believe, from the country code. I think it was the country code community. The country code CCNSO community, I believe, which looked at the actual IANA contract with ICANN as one of the parties and with the NTIA as the other party, and summarized the different component parts as a first step. It could have been someone from ESSAC, but anyway, the attribution, it was somebody who ESSAC. Okay, thank you very much, Holly, and thank you, Jean-Jacques, for that. So it was someone from ESSAC that went through this. Unfortunately, we did not have time to actually plow into this work, but it looks as though it's a very valuable first step to be able to first understand the contract. Clearly, there are two paths forward. One is to just look at the contract, modify the parts which need to be modified so that the U.S. government is not explicitly named, and that's it. Everything is resolved. However, it was raised. The point was raised that actually the contract is with the U.S. government, and now that the U.S. government is not involved, there is no contract. And so the question is, what replaces the contract? ICANN cannot have a contract with itself. ICANN cannot have a contract with IANA, because IANA is not a separate legal entity or anything. It's just a function. So we really are at the very beginning of this question. The timetable for the work was one which was particularly difficult, challenging, should we say. First draft of the proposal should be making it to the ICG by the end of January. And that means a very intense schedule, which many expressed was maybe unrealistic in some way, given the complexities of the process and the fact that the IANA stewardship process needs to run in parallel with the accountability process, which, as we know, has been somehow delayed and hasn't even started its work, is just being defined at this very meeting. And so it sounds like we're all going to have a great time working day and night on this to try and be able to fit within the time scales and the time limits that are needed. And it looks as though those deadlines are not extensible due to the very process that you've given us. So now I open the floor to questions. I see already Eduardo Diaz has started, is in the queue. So we'll have Eduardo, Holly, Evan, and I saw you, Tejani. So we've got, let's start with Eduardo Diaz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Eduardo for the record. Yesterday, I participated in the CWG meeting. They had they were there, and this gentleman, Lawrence Strickling, he mentioned, as far as I understood, that this business about the timeline is flexible. That's what I understood. He said, you know, we're using date where the contract expires, but you know, he said, but you know, we have leeway to do this because we have to do this right. And here, you know, the first thing that comes to my mind, he says, you know, we're setting up this timelines that really maybe the output of, eventually will be not the best output that we may want to have, especially during you know, holidays and things like that, and maybe you know, I don't know if it's possible or not to over go back to the timeline that the ICG put together for this, for everyone to have reports by the end of January, and maybe get something better because you will have more time. That's my opinion. Thank you.
Thank you, Eduardo. Jean-Jacques, did you want to respond briefly to this? The timelines, are the timelines extensible for the ICG to receive the proposal?
Yeah. Well, if the U.S. authority...
Headphones, be careful, the feedback.
Sorry. Thank you, Olivier, for the reminder. This is Jean-Jacques. Without earphones... Oh, actually, this is what I should take away, not the earphones. I think that there are two considerations. One is political, the other is practical. The political consideration is that now it seems to me the U.S. authorities, and through Larry Strickling, expressed the possibility that there was some flexibility. But I think that for practical purposes, our group and other groups involved in this should stick to the timeline as it is already defined. Otherwise, we'll have moving goalposts all the time. We won't make it. If we come to a crunch point sometime in the, let's say, in the spring or summer of 2015, when we realize and the U.S. authorities realize that we're on the right track for the content, but that there is really a calendar problem, then I recognize that we should make use of that flexibility. But I think that it would be very bad policy and a very bad practical approach, at least for us, to start with that. We have to abide by the timeline which has been published.
Thank you, Jean-Jacques. Next is Holly Reich.
Thank you, Olivier. Holly Reich for the transcript purposes. Yes, yesterday there were, I suppose, two important statements. One was the actual Department Secretary herself, Pritzker, who was 100% in support of the multi-stakeholder model. But more importantly, it was Larry Strickling, who said a few very important things. Number one, accountability actually goes through both streams, because one is a sort of a technical accountability. You've got all these technical requirements. What happens if there's no compliance? So there's that kind of accountability that has to be built in. The other accountability, and it obviously worries him, and he said it twice, was what happens if somebody tries to hack in the board, take over the board? That kind of, and I suspect that's what he's hearing politically, because that's what he's saying loud and clear, you haven't told us what you're going to do. So that's the level of accountability, and I think the level of concern. His statement about timelines specifically was we suggested a timeline which was the expiry of the IANA contract, not the other two. That's September, however, and then he said it's up to the community. And everybody kind of, well, I took a deep breath and thought, that's a level of flexibility I haven't heard. I suspect that Jean-Jacques' interpretation of that is correct, that we shouldn't start to think there's flexibility because there's nothing on paper yet. So I think there has to be text on paper, and my suggestion is while we're all here, I think a few of us should sit around the table and start to put some thoughts on paper about even sketching out levels of accountability in the two ways. One is a response to SSA 68. Well, 67 is the background. 68 actually sets out the three contracts. One is with ICANN, but then there's an MOU with IETF. There's another arrangement with IAB. Those three actually are all about the IANA functions, and the SSA 68 makes it clear that there isn't a body of IANA per se. There are functions. They are contracts to perform functions. So you've got almost three contracting parties. So we're actually talking about something more complex. Even a roadmap of that would be really, really useful to say, this is the complexity of the roadmap, this is accountability in this context, this is why the US says this accountability is part of this stream. There is a larger accountability which is relates to the kind of what happens to the multi-stakeholder model if it is under threat. And that's the kind of analysis that you look to, bylaws, constitution, whatever, what's there, what do you build in? So that's, I think, a more complex task than the functions one. But they see them as intertwined, and I gather from what Larry Strickling said, he said, I want it stress tested. I do not want any holes. And I translate that to mean this is going to go into a political hole in the United States. They are going to be under enormous scrutiny and pressure. So he'd rather have us get it right if it takes a little more time. But I think Jean-Jacques. So, I mean, I guess my proposal out of that is that we, as a smaller group, start at the very least to put words on paper. And then also it's a question if there's a smaller group, whatever we call it, should we be sitting in on the Friday meeting? Because from the ALAC perspective, I think we actually have to start supporting something as well. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Holly. Olivier speaking. And in fact, we have in a few hours' time, at the end of the day, we will have a few sessions specifically about the IANA stewardship transition. So we'll be able to actually do exactly what you've suggested. I've closed the queue in the interest of being able to stick to our timelines this morning. I have Evan, Tejani, and Alan in the queue. So first is Evan Leibovich.
Thanks, Olivier. In the interest of expediency, I'll save my comments for the later session so we can not take so much time on this.
Thank you very much, Evan, and I hope you get paid well for your advertising the thing that you just said here. We have Tejani Benjema, Expedia versus expediency.
Thank you, Olivier. Tejani speaking. Jean-Jacques, I don't think that it is in the remit of the ICG to decide on a plan B, because if it doesn't work, that means that we will reach the date of the expiration of the contract. And in this case, it is a high policy. It is not in their remit. The group is tasked to collect the participation of the proposals and to submit it. That's all. That's why the group cannot have a plan B anyway, because it will necessitate something that is absolutely outside its prerogatives.
Jean-Jacques for response.
Thank you. Yes, this is Jean-Jacques. Tijani, you're absolutely right. I may not have formulated it properly early on, but I said there will be no plan B. I didn't cite all the reasons, but of course the main reason is the one you cite, which is that the mandate does not include such an approach. Thank you.
Thank you, Jean-Jacques. Alan has just told me he will pass in the interest of not being delayed. And of course, as I mentioned earlier, we will have this afternoon first a session with the Address Supporting Organization, Address Council, and Number Resource Organization. And the topic is going to be INS stewardship transition, since they are one of the operational communities. Immediately afterwards, we will have a meeting with members of the ICG, the INR Coordination Group. We are one of the only two communities that the ICG is coming to speak with bilaterally, one being the GAC, the other one being the ALAC. And immediately after that, for a full afternoon of INR stewardship transition, if you still have the taste for it, we will have our working group meeting that will basically do what has been suggested just now as to what our next steps are, proposals, etc. I'd like to move to the next working group. The next working group now, and that is the at-large working group on future challenges. And for this update, we have Evan Nipovich and Jean-Jacques Subrenat. I'm not sure who would like to speak to this future challenges. You're both being very kind to each other. One will have to pick up the microphone. Evan Nipovich, go ahead.
Well, you have a diplomat and a Canadian that are trying to figure out what to do. And so you have that kind of result. We could go for another half hour with you, please, first. But essentially, just a very brief summary. Most of what Future Challenges has been doing lately has been addressing the accountability issue. Those of you that were at the meeting with the board earlier saw that we have a number of things on our plate to do with that. And so the accountability issue has sort of become an overarching thing. But again, trying to use the methodology of Future Challenges, it's the kind of process that drives a detailed-oriented person absolutely mad, because our agendas tend to be two-liners, and essentially we're trying to be very free-form, very open-minded, and very forward-thinking about things. That being said, we have a lot on our plate. We have everything that Thematic Group 4 from Atlas put on our hands. We have the overarching issue of accountability. At the last phone conference call of the working group, in fact, we discussed the concept of trust, and that is transparency, accountability, and similar mechanisms are not ends in themselves, in that there is a core issue of trust and legitimacy, and that increasing accountability, increasing transparency are necessary components of building that trust. There's a perception in many communities that ICANN has, shall we say, a trust deficit amongst the public. This has been brought forward through a number of things, not the least of which is my awareness that a number of members of the community have been called by a reporter for the Wall Street Journal, who is in fact trying to dig up stuff on ICANN. There are issues, there are perception issues, and one of the ways that ICANN has to address this is to be accountable and to be transparent in a way that builds trust. And I'll give an example of that. At one level, transparency can mean just making every meeting open, every transcript available, every possible bit of conversation that happens, just to be presentable to the public by this massive stream of data. There's an absolute deluge of information that's coming out. Does that mean that ICANN is transparent? In one level, yes. But it's the volume is such that it still becomes an impediment to participation. It becomes an impediment to awareness. And so while at one level it's being very transparent, at another level there's still lots of obstacles to overcome. So that's just one example of the kind of things that we're dealing with. Our output in the previously has been in the form of white papers rather than advice. There's a likelihood or possibility that may still happen in this case, and so that's just an indication of how we're working on this. Jean-Jacques, would you like to add?
No, your eloquence has covered everything. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Jean-Jacques, and thank you for this update, Evan. A quick question to make sure we're set regarding the accountability track. We just had a meeting with the board a little bit earlier, and there were some recommendations that were sent to the Future Challenges Working Group that involved some follow-up. As such, how will that work with the rest of the work of the working group?
Thanks, Olivier. This is Evan. Just as was indicated earlier when we discussed talking about those recommendations, you saw we split them up into the ones that required long-term activity and the ones that had to be dealt with immediately because they were IANA-related, timeline-related. And so we right now have our own internal challenges of dealing with those two things separately. As you noticed earlier, it was Holly that was speaking to the immediate recommendation, so we are trying to work for some... We are trying to work with some mechanisms. They may be inside future challenges. They may be brought outside into something else. But we're aware of the distinction between some recommendations that need to be dealt with immediately and the other ones that we can use our traditional sort of high-level method of working on it.
Thank you very much, Evan. It's Olivier speaking. And I believe we also have an action item from our first meeting on Sunday where there was going to be another ad hoc accountability track to respond quickly to the accountability track. Holly?
Where we wound up on Sunday, which this is just my impression because I'm not sure, we recognise, but let me go back to an earlier decision on what to do with the thematic group four recommendations. A lot of that got lumped into the future challenges, and there was some initial work done on accountability by Evan in that group. What became apparent in discussion, however, is that quite different nature between some of the high-level stuff and what has to be done immediately. So where we've left off is we need a few people. We need the advice of Jean-Jacques, probably, and whomever, so that we're feeding whatever we do up. My understanding is that we have to approve something, and I was just thinking, should I work on like a few sentences to say this is what we're doing? Could we actually officially create a group or something? Because we originally thought this would be a working group of future challenges. We don't necessarily have in the bylaws a way to do that. So I think where we got to is we need something officially constituted. I don't think anybody's terribly fussed as to where it's constituted. I think I'm very happy to write up a few sentences as to what the task of it is, which would be literally just taking Larry Strickling's words and saying, we have to do this, and we have to cooperate with and feed into what Jean-Jacques and Mohamed are doing, so that there is an ALAC group that's working on accountability. I don't know how that's constituted, but I know it's urgent, and I'm happy to put pen to paper and title it whatever you like.
Yeah, thank you very much for this, Holly. Actually, I have the action items from Sunday, 12th of October. And there was in the hot topic to NTI and our function stewardship transition, a motion was made, to create an ad hoc working group on accountability and governance. It's difficult to do a subgroup of a working group. It's primarily for logistical issues, mailing list, this sort of stuff, staff allocation and so on. So create an ad hoc working group on accountability and governance with initial task of INS stewardship issues, and I think it was said stewardship issues, since this will have accountability and we never know what other parts there are in there, to include current members of the CCWG, to be confirmed, so the cross-committee working group that we have, Alan Greenberg, two members of the ICG, of course, and the vote will take place because, of course, the ALAC, when creating ad hoc working groups, needs to vote on this. So I think that Alan had volunteered to draft the motion, which was just a couple of lines, which probably is this. And then we would have the vote on Thursday for the wrap-up. And in the meantime, staff has already started creating the mailing lists and all that. So we're immediately after this meeting, we're all in operation. We don't have to discuss process, but can go straight into the meat and work on this. Any questions or comments on this topic? Alan Greenberg.
Just for the record, I didn't draft anything, and I think I had forgotten I was supposed to if I was, but if someone else has drafted it, I'll be glad to move it.
Okay, thank you very much, Alan. I don't think anyone has drafted it, and we're all looking at you. We have until Thursday, that's fine, but just a kind reminder. Holly, and then we'll probably have to go to the next working group. Holly Reich.
I'm happy to forward to Alan or anybody a précis of what Larry Strickling said, because it seems to me that's exactly what we've got to do. You know, he actually said, this is what accountability means, this is what we're looking for. So it strikes me that's what we're looking for.
Thank you, Holly. Any other question on John Laprise?
John Laprise from Nerallo. I just want to emphasize this. This has come up at previous ICANN meetings and also at IGF meetings, is that, you know, we're all very focused on meeting the requirements of the NTIA letter. But at the end of the day, we are, whatever comes out of us gets approved by the NTIA or doesn't get approved. They are the final gatekeeper. And meeting their requirements is crucial. And keeping an eye on all of their requirements, including the implicit ones, is crucial for success. So Strickling's comments are perfectly in line with U.S. positions. And one of the things with regard to U.S. domestic policy, speaking in my capacity as a U.S. citizen, I would not be too concerned about changes, political changes overall in U.S. government for its impact on the transition plan. The executive branch has a very different view of this than what you see in Congress. So a lot of Congress is a lot of noise. So don't worry so much about that. The executive branch is where it's at. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for this, John. And I also realize the topic is a dark star, a potential black hole that sucks everything in its path. We are on the Future Challenges Working Group, and we've gone back to IANA. We'll never get away from that. Any other questions or comments regarding Future Challenges? Seeing no one, let's move on then to the next topic, and that's the new GTLD working group. And again, back to Evan Leibovich, our chair of the new GTLD working group. Evan.
Thanks very much, Olivier. And I'll take the time that I have now to go back to the meeting that we had last night, where we had a face-to-face meeting of the working group. One of the things that has been, essentially, we are now charged with two tasks. One of which was deferred, so I'll deal with that first. The at-large approach to what happens in future rounds of new GTLDs is a concern. Certainly there were things that we can look at that need to be fixed from the first round. And so we have a task to, we have a significant task ahead of us to look at the metrics, to go back to your communities, find out what were the consequences of the GTLD expansion, and then to come back to us so that at-large can make recommendations. We know now, as of yesterday, that ICANN will be taking a very deliberative approach to the second round, that it will not be jumping into it too fast. This is very good to know. It gives us the time to be able to step back, catch our breath, review things, look at metrics, go back to our communities, and be able to make some very, very serious comments moving forward, specifically addressing issues that were important to us, such as community evaluations, applicant support in developing countries, and the like, as well as things like the objection process, which did not serve us very well as it was designed. But that is being deferred because that is something a bit longer term. ICANN has said that we have a little bit of time to work on that, so we will take that time. In the meantime, we have an immediate issue that we want to deal with because it relates to the current round, and that has to do with the concept of public interest commitments. This is a component of the GTLD program, part of the applicant agreement with ICANN, intended to provide some public safeguards. Based on analysis from members of at-large, we...
Now that works. Power's off. Do our interpreters hear? Yes, they do. The show can continue. The show must go on. The show must go on.
It certainly must. Okay, so I will continue with the hand mic until those other issues get addressed. So, as I said, we had an evaluation that the public interest commitment process, that was as it was presented, presented a lot of challenges, had a lot of deficiencies. In fact, over the summer, we put out a public comment process, which is not something that ALAC does very often, but was done because the ICANN board did not want to do that. It was the belief of senior staff and the ICANN board that this issue has been dealt with satisfactorily. We did not see it that way. We put out a public comment process. The very quick summary of it was the comments that we received from the domain industry said that things are okay as they were and we shouldn't change anything. And the responses from just about everybody else said, no, they are a bad thing. We need to fix this. There's another part of the community that suggested a remedy called policy advisory boards as a possible solution. While we found widespread dislike of the PIC process, we found a divergence of opinion on whether or not policy advisory boards were a satisfactory answer. So the way that, in fact, I think we want to go through this is to split those issues up, one into building widespread community support that agrees that the PICs are a bad idea. We believe we have some support for that within governments. And in fact, as part of the meeting that we have with the GAC, we're going to raise this issue. And as a result of the meeting we had last night, we will try and engage with some issue from some individual with governments to put together a joint ALAC-GAC position on this that we hope will provide a very compelling statement to the board that will freeze a handful of very publicly sensitive TLDs until we can address with public commitments and safeguards. And so essentially, that is where things are at. At the present time, two people, that is Rafatani and myself, are going to be working on a statement, possibly for presentation to the Thursday ALAC meeting, for ALAC advice that the ICANN board freeze a small number of TLDs
pending the resolution of proper community commitments. In the meantime, in our interaction with the GAC, we will see if we can put together a small group of ALAC people, at-large people, and government people brought together to try and figure out a solution. We have widespread consensus that the PICs are a bad idea. We don't have solution. We don't have consensus on a solution, so we need to be able to say that we're working forward on that, while we, at the same time as we say the existing regime does not work. I'm open to questions on it at this time.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Evan. And we are faced with a power issue for our mic system. So we have flying mics that work for this. Any questions or comments on the report by Evan? Yes, Alan Greenberg.
Just a short suggestion. When we talk about the PICs, I recommend not saying PICs don't work. There are aspects of the PICs which are enforceable and do work. They're not the parts that we're talking about that are important for our aspects.
Thank you, Alan. Evan?
I guess when I say PICs don't work, I'm oversimplifying things. There are two components of the PIC component. One is a mandatory set of PICs that are in all the contracts. They mainly deal with intellectual property issues. The other set of the PICs are optional, and those are the ones that are supposed to deal with public protection, and those are the ones that have the serious deficiencies. So you're right, what I said is a bit of an oversimplification, but there seems to be widespread consensus that the public interest components of the public interest commitments have a lot of deficiencies.
And a follow-up from Alan, and then we have Tijani afterwards. Yeah. Alan Greenberg.
Thank you. Evan, I really wasn't concerned about lack of precision. It's just by making a global statement, someone can shoot you down and invalidate the important parts of what you're saying. So a little bit of precision helps.
You have my word that when the final statement comes out, the term PICs won't work will not be found in that statement.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Yeah, just as a reminder, the meeting with the GAC later on today has a first topic, public interest commitments and GAC Category 1 safeguards. And then we'll have INA stewardship transition as a second topic and at-large summit as a third topic. I hope we will be able to quickly go through the topics and not spend so much time. I think just 1 hour for three topics is going to be challenging. Next is Tijani Benjema, and I have to pass the microphone over to Tijani for this.
Thank you, Olivier. Evan, I would like that the work be really and clearly separated. For the work on the subsequent round has to start now, and has to be and has to continue. We don't have to work today on this and tomorrow on this. Perhaps it will be a mess. You have to know that there is a work done by the discussion group, and I am sure that they will continue with a higher speed. Because if the GNSO have created this group, I think they intend to go further and to work more. So we have to be on time. We have to prepare our positions. We have positions very clear. So we have to prepare them and to be ready for any surprise. Thank you.
Thanks to Jenny. This is Evan. In response, I'm merely talking about the immediate work at hand. When we had the GTLD working group meeting last night, the entire time of the meeting was taken up with dealing with the public interest commitments because of the immediacy for this week, because of the meeting with the GAC, because of the need to put something in front of the community this week. It doesn't mean that the other work immediately takes second class, but for the purposes of this week and the work we need to do, the PICs are taking center stage. As we go on, it's been made very clear that just because that ICANN is being deliberative about the second round, they're collecting information about it immediately. I am a part of the discussion group, And so I have already been adding my comments in about this kind of thing. We have problems with the community evaluation. We have problems with applicant support. We have problems with Module 3. This is all understood. This is all moving forward. This is simply a matter of prioritization for this week because this is what we're dealing with right now.
Thank you very much, Evan. Olivier speaking. So you mentioned a potential statement that the ALAC would have to vote on during its wrap-up on Thursday. Could you elaborate a bit more on as to when that statement will be ready or that draft will be ready and proposed to the ALAC, since we are all very busy and, of course, the earlier the better if something like that was to be drafted?
You notice as you said that, Raf and myself were exchanging furtive looks at each other. I guess the thing is we will be working on this almost immediately after this meeting with the goal of having something cogent to present on Thursday. I believe that some of that, in fact, will be guided by how things go with the GAC today. If we succeed in having a partnership with certain GAC members or an overall consensus that the GAC sees issues with this, I think that will have an effect on our statement. But I can assure you that one is being worked on in post-haste, and it's our intent to circulate a draft in as far in advance of the Thursday working meeting as we can.
Thank you for this, Evan. And I think that as a result, if we want to expedite things, the first thing is you cannot wait until Thursday to provide a first draft to the ALAC and then expect the ALAC to vote on it there and then. What I would suggest is that as soon as you have a first draft, this gets put up on a wiki page, which turns me over to at-large staff to create a wiki page and our policy development part of our wiki. Ariel, if that could be done as soon as possible, and then of course let Evan know about this, and therefore the moment you have a first draft we can immediately issue a call on the mailing list to at-large for them to immediately read that and to provide their feedback.
Understood. Just so you're aware of the mechanics we're using, we will be using for the first draft a shared Google document. If there are other members of the community that would like to participate, either watching us as the factory is going on, or in fact to make substantive additions to it, that's certainly welcomed. Having more than two pen holders is, always helps it go faster. But like I say, as soon as we have something, you and staff will be sent the first draft, and we can distribute it any way you'd like.
Okay, thank you, Evan. Can we have that for tonight? Please. Evan, it's Olivia speaking. There's only music night tonight. It's that or you have to go on stage and sing.
You will have that draft.
No, sorry, Evan. It's Olivia speaking. No, just have it for as soon as possible. But obviously, this is a very sensitive thing, and it will all depend on our discussions with the GAC later on today. But it is something which we have been pursuing for a while, and there's been significant pushback from the board to look at this issue and expand on these issues. Of course, you mentioned. Well, actually, you did not mention one thing: the appointment of someone. With regards to public accountability. Did you wish to say a couple of words on this?
I can only share my personal opinions right now, and that is one thing for ICANN to establish a staff position of public safeguards based on our current understanding of the public interest commitments. That person has very little to enforce right now. So... having a position that enforces public safeguards with no safeguards in place seems to be a rather empty thing, and it's our intention to work on that.
Okay, thank you very much for this. And it's now 10:59. In a few seconds, it will be 11 o'clock in the morning local time. And that takes us to agenda item number 2, an internationalized domain name update with Sarmad Hussain, who is the IDN program senior manager, and Jiaju Yu Kimoto, who She's not here. Okay. Business Intelligence Program Management. Is she joining us later? Or it'll just be you, Sarmat. Oh, excellent. Well, I first met Sarmat in Nairobi at the ICANN meeting in Nairobi. And whilst everyone, he was not part of ICANN then. He was part of the Pan Localization Project. And when at that time anybody spoke about IDNs, it was a big question mark in everybody's minds, having non-Latin character sets being implemented on the internet. What kind of a weird idea is this? And then Sarmat seemed to be the only person that knew absolutely everything and anything about it. And I did ask for him to join at large. He never did. He joined, I think it was NCSG SSAC. Oh, okay, so he joined SSAC, of course, stability relating to these topics. But now he is the IDN program manager, senior manager. And so we basically will have an update from you. I realize you have a few slides. Unfortunately, our microphone system has already died. We are very verbose here, and it overheated. And so I'll have to hand the hand mic over to you, Sarmat.
Thank you. So basically what we've been doing since Singapore is we've been going out to all the SOs and ACs and providing an update at each ICANN meeting. So this is an update for IDN program to ALAC. Can we go to the slide with the agenda? Thank you. So for today's presentation, I'll very briefly introduce what the IDN program at ICANN does, and then focus the presentation on update on the IDN TLD program and the outreach efforts we're doing to the community to get the community involved and keep it informed, and then very briefly the next steps as we go forward. Next slide, please. Next slide. Yeah. So as far as IDN program at ICANN is concerned, we're largely focused on three areas. One of the main things we do is assist in the IDN CCTLD string evaluation for eventual delegation. So we actually implement the fast track program for IDN CCTLD applications. In addition, we have a fairly large program which is currently running to develop a label generation rule set for the root zone. I'll get in a little more detail for this program in next slides. So can we go back to the previous slide? Thank you. The third thing which we work on are what are called IDN implementation guidelines. These are guidelines which are developed in joint consultation with CCNSO and GNSO. We have volunteers from these groups which develop guidelines which are applicable at second level, not at top level. And they are focused at reducing consumer risk and confusion. The last time they were updated were 2011. We are now looking at the possibility of revisiting these guidelines and revising them based on GNSO and CCNSO input. And this time we are also interested in getting ALAC involvement in the revision process. And then obviously the work we do, we are trying to now do an active outreach effort to the community to let them know what is going on within the IDN program. Next slide, please. Next slide. Coming to the IDN TLD program, basically, if you look at the traditional domain names, if you look at the second level, we had domain names like ABC-123. But at top level, the domain names have even traditionally been very restricted, more restricted than second level. So, for example, you can have letters at the top level, like XY, but you cannot at top level have hyphens and digits. So even for ASCII, the top level domains have been always more conservative than second level and other levels. Next slide, please. So when we go to these other scripts beyond ASCII and go into internationalized domain names, sometimes it becomes unclear what... So in ASCII, we have a letter principle. The top-level domain can only include letters, not digits, not anything else. But for these other scripts, when we start including them, it is unclear what a letter is or what a how letter principle from ASCII can actually be extended to these other scripts. So we are actually running a large program right now, which includes community effort in all these scripts, and community groups have to be formed to advise ICANN on what is quote-unquote a letter for their script, the script they are using. So we have to define what characters can go into a label for top level. In addition, the way Unicode defines these characters or these tables in these languages, sometimes there is confusion between two different code points. And if that is the case, those two code points have to be defined as variants so that consumers do not get confused in the use of those code points. So we also have to define variants. And then we have to define any additional constraints on these labels, because ASCII is a very simple writing system. But when we go to these other writing systems, they have very complex rules, for example, of forming syllables or what can come, what can come after the other. So these are actually context-sensitive writing systems. So this TLD program is basically focused on devising all these rules for forming a top-level domain label so that a label can be formed in a very transparent, machine-parsable way, rather than somebody applies and doesn't really know whether that label is eligible or not for top-level. Next slide, please. So this program started back in 2011, where there were six case studies done to define or understand what the kinds of issues are. These issues were then integrated together, and based on the integrated issues, a plan was devised to solve the problem. Next slide, please. In summary, what the plan is that we start from what is called a maximal starting repertoire, or MSR, which is the list of possible code points, obviously excluding things like digits or hyphens or punctuation marks. And that is given to each community. Each community, script community, forms a panel of volunteers, and they look at their portion of the maximal starting repertoire, and based on that, give a proposal to ICANN on the characters which could be used to form a top-level domain name. ICANN receives individual proposals from each community on different scripts and integrates that into one large table, language table, or what we now call root zone label generation rule set. So that is done through an integration panel, which is maintained by ICANN. But the generation panels, which are the community-based groups, are volunteer groups, which are actually, in a way, hosted and run by the community themselves. Next slide, please. At this stage, the Arabic generation panel has been formed. Chinese generation panel has been formed. MSR 1, the starting point was for 22 scripts were released in January. In December, there are 6 remaining scripts. Those will also be released in December this year. So MSR will be completed by the end of this year, which will be the input to the L generation panels for developing their proposals. We are anticipating Arabic and Chinese generation panels will finalize their work towards the end of this year or early next year to go into the first release of LGR, which is expected to come out in the end of the financial year. Next slide, please. So this is all the scripts which we need to work on, and anything which is not green needs more active participation. But we've actually been reaching out to the communities, and for many of these communities which are yellow in color, there is some activity which has started out, even though this is not finalized. Next slide, please. Next slide. So we've been also trying to work with the community, engage the community to let them know how we're doing and what the requirements are, because a lot of our work is based on community outreach. So we actually have been going out to the communities. We do regular updates to ICANN, SOs and ACs during meetings, but we also go to regional meetings and try to get more people involved in this process. Next slide, please. And we have also a lot of material on our website. Next slide. Next slide, please. As far as going forward is concerned, we will continue to work on the ID and TLD program. We are now looking at guidance from the community on ID and implementation guidelines that will be coming up later this year. Obviously, we continue to support the ID and CCTLD fast-track process. Recently, strings from Iraq and Belarus were added to, were approved. There are a couple of more strings now in process which are going to be announced soon. And we continue to reach out to the community. So thank you very much, and I'll take any questions you have. By the way, we have two sessions on IDN tomorrow, so if you are interested in more details, please come and attend. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this, Sarmad. As you know, many members, it's Olivier speaking, as you know, many members in the at-large community come from the very locations of the world that have different scripts, and I think that many of our members already are involved with the LGR and with the work of your department. I see Serenush in that corner. I'm not sure, was it Armenian? Are you involved with no, the mic does not work, unfortunately. Oh, it does work. Oh, perfect. Oh, well, okay, fine. Good news. Nobody tells me anything in this house. Go ahead, Serenush.
Thank you, Chair Sinanush Vardanyan, for the record. We have applied already for IDN script, so this is in the process of due diligence. So we passed first part of it, and we are following the process. So it takes time, as you all know, but we are involved, and we have already discussed with Sarmat to organize, to have some volunteer group from Armenia to be involved in this language discussions and to conduct training for local professionals.
Okay, thank you very much for this. We have, I just saw behind us our ISOC Japan, one of our more recent ALSs, Ms. Kitamura. Are you involved in any IDN program scripts?
I'm sorry, I'm not, but actually the ISOC Japan chair is here, so that he is also.
So, yep, yes, my name is Tomohiro Fujisaki, ISOC Japan chapter chair. And the ISOC Japan chapter, we have a member from the JPRS, the Japanese.jp registry, and actually he was deeply involved with the IDN, but unfortunately he didn't come now here. So, what I say? Anything?
Yeah. Thank you, Tomohiro. It was just to ask basically whether you would be interested in taking part in the label generation rules or anyone in your chapter to be involved. Sarmad Hussain is here. He's the program director for this, so it's a good moment perhaps that you could speak with him. I think there is definitely a need for Japanese script.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Actually, we are very interested in such kind of topics, and yes.
Yeah, excellent. So just afterwards, you can probably, now you see each other. And I see behind Satish Babu as well. Satish from India.
Thanks, Olivier. Satish Babu for the record. In India, we have 5 languages right now in the pipeline, plus another 3 coming up. And the community is rallying around the process, and we're trying to also help out. So definitely we will see some action from the at-large side in India. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this, Satish. And you have right next to me sitting the program director. I think members in your organization need to get involved in for all the different scripts. I certainly can't read any of those scripts in India, but really great. And last question. I wanted to go back a couple of slides, please, on this. And this is just a sort of personal question and asking, thinking, really. But there is a bit further back, looking at the different scripts. The complexity of the task that you basically have. Back. There we go. Tiang Viet. Now, what is the difference between Tiang Viet with the accents and without the accents? How can you really differentiate this? As far as a user is concerned, to me it looks like the same thing. It just seems to be a few specks on top and underneath. But right. I know there's very big difference. User confusion is potentially.
Right. So what we are now actually also doing is putting together a Latin generation panel, which will look at and decide which of these characters should be allowed in addition to the basic ASCII. And then how they, what kind of variant relationship they have with characters which are not decorated, corresponding characters which are not decorated. And so many of you who are Latin script users can actually get involved. We had a meeting with, initial meeting with the Latin script community yesterday, which discussed, we are again starting to put this together. We actually have a Cyrillic community meeting today. If you're interested, let me know, and I'll give you information about that as well. So these are informal meetings. We're trying to get the generations panels together. So if you, please get involved for your script, and if you need any information, please feel free to contact me and we'll follow up.
Thank you very much for this, Sarmat Hussain. And I remind you all, this is quite historical. It's a real change from internet and Latin script to internet and all the scripts. And so I really urge you to take part of this and I would say even be part of history, how things are moving forward. And so with this, I know I can see it's 4:15. And so thank you very much, Sarmat, for coming to speak to me.
Thank you all.
And of course, as I mentioned, Sarmat, before you go, please go and speak to the people involved. And I would hope you'd be able to exchange details so as to proceed forward and have more people in there. Yes. Great. So joining us over at the table next is, let's see, Maggie Sarad. Oh, Maggie, compliance update. She's VP of Contractual Compliance Services. And I can see she's joined by Owen Smigielski, whom we know as well. Welcome, Owen. Welcome. I see Victor Oppenheimer as well, or at least his name card.
Who's
here?
Who's driving the slides?
Okay. Errol is driving the slides.
All right, cool.
Good morning, Maggie. And so as soon as the slide deck is ready, then we can get going. I don't see any slide decks at the moment. There is
a
huge amount of movement behind.
Gisela acknowledged them, received last night. I sent them last night.
And this, ladies and gentlemen, is how we lose minutes.
So no, that's agenda. Okay. I'm going. We're not. We never lose minutes with me. You know better. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for another opportunity. I really look forward to come to ICANN meetings. It's like family reunions. You see everybody. Some members you just are excited to see. Some are going to complain more, and some are going to share. So I'm really looking forward to another exciting week here. With me in the audience, I'm proud to announce my new boss. Alan Grogan. We'll give him the opportunity to speak after we address the questions and the topics updates. But mostly, I'm really proud to have the Los Angeles-based team to join me in person. And if you don't mind, I'd like them to stand up. I have the pleasure and the honor. I'm really honored to work with such a wonderful team. Our team in Istanbul is joining us remotely, and our team in Singapore is also. So with that... You're in good, trusted hands.
Is anyone in the office today running the internet, or is this whole thing?
I knew Olivier was going to ask that. Monsieur Crépin, Monsieur Sherman, people have worked early in the morning and late in the evening to be able to come and meet the ALAC constituency group.
Processing.
Yes. And what we hope to do is our normal. We give you a very high-level update on topics that are relevant to this audience. We look forward to your comments and feedback. And if you would hold the questions till the end, we'll give you a very high-level update, and then we definitely are here to listen to you. Thank you. Sit there and drive the slides.
Okay.
Victor, I'll sit with you.
Good morning. Owen Smigelski, for the record. Trying to avoid the microphone issues. Okay. Next slide, please. I have a loud, booming voice. Next slide. So here's just a brief agenda of what we're going to do. I'm going to speak about registrar. Victor will then speak about registry-related issues, audit program update, and then we'll do the Q&A. Next slide, please. So since ICANN 51... back one slide. Since ICANN 51, here are some of the steps we've made. We've brought in a Who is an Accuracy QR, Remediation QR, abuse updates, and so we'll go ahead and cover those now. Next slide. One thing that we did was take a look back at all Who is an Accuracy complaints that were resolved because the registrar suspended the domain name. This data you see here represents all complaints between January and June 2014, about 1,300 complaints. Compliance went back to ensure continued compliance with the RAA, either confirming that it was still suspended or in some cases deleted. Otherwise, we followed up with the registrar to ensure that proper steps were taken to ensure either verification of the address or whatever the inaccuracy was. And out of that, we had 100% compliance from the registrars for those complaints that we reviewed. We've also rolled out, since London is remediation quality review or remediation QR, and that is a process to ensure that when a contracted party does a remediation, either through the informal or a formal resolution process, that the contractor party remains in compliance. Not all issues like a who is an accuracy or something that can be resolved right away in closing the ticket. Sometimes there does need to be a change in the system or the processes, and the contractor parties know that we're doing this now, and if we do find later on that there is an issue that the issue was not fixed, that'll result in an escalated notice, which the contractor party has 5 days to cure. Otherwise, it'll be in breach. There's been a large increase in the abuse complaints that are ongoing with the 2013 RAA. The most common ones the compliance is seeing in order are ones about online pharmaceuticals, malware, viruses, and then spam. There are a couple of them that we do not process, and we actually close, and that is when the registrar is on the 2009 RAA. That is not something that's binding. There's no requirements for abuse processing in the 2009 RAA. And another is when the reporter is just contacting ICANN about the abuse first and has not followed up with the registrar. We want to make sure that the process is followed and that the registrar is receiving the abuse complaints. Compliance is also, and other ICANN staff has conducted ongoing outreach with registrars, abuse reporters, as well as IP rights protection groups to explain more in level expectation set in terms of what is and what is not in the contract and what kind of steps are required to be taken. Next slide, please. Something that you may have seen, because ICANN blogged about it, was some concerns regarding fraudulent domain renewal emails. Compliance is seeing a large number of these, and these are not ones that are coming typically from a registrar. It's coming from what appears to be a reseller, and generally it's targeted to either trademark owners And there's a high degree of sophistication. Sometimes it will use a person's first name or something like that. It'll include the domain name. The concern is that often there's a very high premium being charged. They're asking to protect a domain or something like that. And these then contain links to a website that you can't tell who the registrar is. You can't tell what's going on. And it would appear to be a payment collection and personal information a phish attempt or something along those lines. So compliance is following up with inquiries to the resellers. We've also engaged the registrars to review whether they're resellers or not, and in some cases report abuse to them. So you know, we are taking some additional steps to that to clean up the ecosystem. Some of the 2013 lessons learned RAA is ongoing. There has been some concern regarding what is verification versus validation of information. Verify means you actually check that it is correct. Validation means you confirm that it's in a correct format. There's been some confusion with registrars about that, and so we're working to clear that up. Also, some registrars just aren't investigating abuse complaints, so we're working with them to ensure that they do have a process in place to receive, respond, and track abuse complaints. There's also been some issues with registrars not sending the proper renewal reminders as required by the ERRP, and we're working with them to resolve that. And then also there's been some issues with UDRP where registrars are not verifying the person who's subject or the entity that's subject to a UDRP complaint or allowing an improper transfer. They're not maintaining the status quo pending the UDRP proceeding. And with that, I'm going to pass it on to Victor, or Senior Oppenheimer, as Maggie calls him.
Thank you, Owen. And again, for the record, my name is Victor Oppenheimer, Senior Manager, ICANN Compliance. And I'd like to provide a brief update on activities since ICANN 50, starting with the public interest commitments. I'd like to highlight a few items. Number one, the PICDRP standing panel. That is part of the PIC DRP or of the PIC procedure is in place. I encourage you to click on the link and read the information about the standing panel at your leisure. And I can listen to the GAC and community concerns about the readiness of registry operators to comply with the mandatory and voluntary PIC provisions, and it launched a proactive monitoring back in late August, and it's underway. And I'll have a slide later with more information on that. And regarding the PICs, essentially all the TLDs that as of 1 October 2014 were in general availability are part of this proactive monitoring. I also, at the bottom of the slide, encourage you to follow our progress with this project. And just clicking on that link would take you to ICANN's website, and you can track our progress regarding this proactive monitoring. So, as stated before, ICANN is monitoring mandatory provisions, and ICANN is verifying, number one, that per the RA, per the registry agreement, registry operators are only using 2013 RAA registrars, that they have included the mandatory provision in the RRA warning the registrant that any abusive behavior containing the provision can result up to suspension of the domain name. And ICANN is also verifying that registry operators are maintaining the statistical reports on the security threats detected and the actions that they have taken based on those reports. So we're asking them to provide data on that. ICANN is also checking that the registration policies, the general registration policies, are being published in their websites, and that unless they are dot brands, they're not imposing restrictive registrations of the sort that only dot brands are allowed to. Regarding the PIC provisions, I mean the voluntary provisions, there are quite a few. It varies among registry operators. I'm highlighting some of the ones that we considered more sensitive. For example, where some registry operators voluntarily committed to perform WHOIS audits and taking remediation steps. Others committed to exclude registrars with a history of non-compliance. So we want to know, ICANN is inquiring, what processes they have in place to determine where they are in non-compliance. ICANN also, as part of the voluntary commitments, many of them have the requirement to establish a collaboration pathway with governments, industries, self-regulatory bodies in the various countries to ensure that the abuse reports are addressed properly. And finally, some voluntary commitments also are about limiting domain name proxy and privacy services only to registrars that enforce the accuracy of registrant data. So ICANN really is asking for information on what processes they have implemented, they have in place, so that to assess the level of compliance and take the appropriate steps.
Victor, if I may interrupt. I know we're providing some information. I just want to be mindful so we have some Q&A. So if I may, these are some stats about where we are with the preliminary statistics and why we're doing it. And there are some slides on the name collision slide and an update on the audit program. I'm looking at the clock. It scared me because it keeps counting down, and I know you like to ask your questions. So with that, I'm sorry, Victor, I interrupted you, and Jan, you're not going to present. Talk to us.
Thank you very much, Maggie. And yes, we have this countdown clock specifically to give you shivers when making your presentation. It's not specifically you, but pretty much me as well. Keep me in check. Let's open the floor for questions. There's been a lot already that's been worked on here. I think I've already got... Evan already just put his hand up by just a simple smile a couple of hours ago before the meeting even started. So we've got Evan, Holly, and Alan in the queue. Let's start with Evan Nibovich.
Thanks very much, Olivier. My questions, I guess, mainly are for you, Victor, because you mentioned in the first slide that the issue about PICs was going to be done with consideration of GAC and community input. I'd like to get an idea of your awareness of what the community feedback has been on public interest commitments. You may or may not be aware, At Large has had a significant debate about this going into a public comment process, and we've received significant feedback. I'd like to get an idea of what your perception of the community feedback is and how you are modifying what you're doing in order to accommodate that, as you said in your first slide.
Sure. Victor Oppenheimer again, for the record. So my understanding of ALAC in particular concerns are based on, like you mentioned, the comments that ALAC submitted for the PIC DRP in particular. So it was really, your comments were very tailored to the PIC DRP per se, at least that's my perception or my understanding. What this proactive monitoring is actually doing is verifying what is the compliance with the contractual requirements.
Okay, so I'd like to expand that to get your opinion on a couple of things. First of all, the issue of third-party standing. So, for instance, if somebody is not directly affected, that is, they're not the registrant,
but somebody, a third party, an internet user, is affected by something going on, do they have standing within the PIC system? And secondly, I'd like to find out what are the remedies. Based on our reading of the PIC regime, in terms of if a PIC is declared to be in breach, so what are the remedies? It seems like there's only two options. Either the contract is in breach, or there's or nothing's happened. Are there remedies? Are there penalties? Are there any kind of remedial functions that are possible that are not just sort of one extreme or the other? Is there actually a published set of interim measures that can be taken outside of the extremes of you're in breach or there's no problem? Thanks.
So I guess two different questions. One is, what about the standing of third parties regarding the public interest commitments? Third parties would not have standing under the PIC DRP. However, that doesn't mean that there are no other avenues for third parties, including, number one, directly talking to the registry operator or submitting a complaint outside of the PIC DRP process to ICANN, and ICANN will investigate as well. Excuse me?
Sorry, this is Evan. What can ICANN do when such a complaint is received?
ICANN will follow the informal process like we do for any complaint. And basically, there will be a validation of whether there is at least one violation of the PIC for that particular registry operator. And, you know, depending on the determination, contact the registry operator. Secondly, you ask about remedies. And I think the question was, is there anything in between a notice of breach and or doing nothing? So again, we go back to our established standard processes. ICANN always tries to collaborate with the registry operator and avoid, if possible, going to breach through our informal 1-2-3 process. If that doesn't work and ICANN breaches the registry operator, then the only remedies are those, the ones included in the registry agreement, which are curing the breach within 30 days and any other alternative dispute resolution available under the registry agreement for the operators.
Hi, I'm Alan Grogan. Let me just jump in for a second here. A couple of things. I think in terms of who has standing, any party that can show they've been harmed has standing. So, I'm not sure what you mean by third parties, right?
Do you recognize non-financial harm?
So it doesn't specify financial harm, so I think we would. In terms of remedies, if you read the PIC DRP carefully, there are references to, for example, the expert panel being able to include a recommendation of remedies, and that's very broad. So I don't think that the remedies are necessarily limited.
Okay, thank you very much, and welcome to the table, Alan Grogan. Let's go through our queue. We've got Holly Reich and Alan Greenberg next. So, Holly, you're first.
First of all, to Alan, I'm delighted you now have added consumer safeguards. I think at another meeting I'd like to know how broad your remit is, because, in fact, they're scattered throughout what you do, all the way from the RAA information, that sort of thing, and I keep running across consumer safeguards or rather lack thereof, so that's interesting. A couple of things that were mentioned yesterday. One, have you taken on board I think it was Heather Dryden and Peter Nettlefold who pointed out that the statistics and the way you gather statistics, which has a definition, which does something in terms of accuracy, is the format right as opposed to is it accurate? And it's differently constructed
in the NORC study. So I think there was a kind of a, could we have comparability or some kind of comparability, and I want to know if that's possible. So it's possible to determine the extent to which the 2013 amendments have made any progress. And I'll stop there for the moment. Thank you.
So this is Owen Smigelski. For that, I think this the NORC study is a first step, an attempt to baseline to see where it is. And there were some issues identified in there that stuck out that were highlighted as either being too high or too low, and where compliance is participating, as with other parts of ICANN, to review the methodology and how that's being calculated in there. And we're also then taking a look at the data as well, the raw data, to see if there's areas for improvement without having before the process is set up to send those inaccuracies to the registrars. We're going to work with the registrars or registries, as it may be, if there's a systemic issue that we can identify and work with to clear up some of that those inaccuracies.
A quick follow-up from Holly Reich.
It's not a follow-up. Victor, you mentioned privacy proxy. When the specification, which is being developed, is finally developed and passed, there are going to be accredited privacy proxy providers, and obviously there's going to be a whole slew of people who aren't accredited who nevertheless act that way. I trust you're going to deal with both.
Thank you, Holly. Next is Alan Greenberg. Alan, you have the floor.
Thank you. Two questions. First, very small one for Owen. Can we roll back to one of your first slides, the one with the pie chart about checking whether domains that were taken down are still down, or what the status of them is. I think you said 100% of registrars are compliant. I thought I saw a number there saying for 1% the domain was active even though the whois was unchanged.
Correct, Owen Smigelski. And what is doing with that is the registrar verified that the domains have to be suspended within 15 days of a whois inaccuracy complaint if there's no response from the registrar. And then so the domain gets suspended, our ticket processing system closes the complaint. We then go back to check, and we notice that the data has changed or isn't changed and the domain is no longer suspended. We request the documentation from the registrar to show at what point did that was that data verified as required by the RAA? So they demonstrate compliance on that matter.
So you're saying there was a complaint?
Please give your names interpretation.
So you're saying that there was a complaint, it was taken down even though the whois information was actually correct and then was put back up?
There was a whois inaccuracy complaint. Because there was a non-response, the registrar suspended the domain, and then when we go back and look at it with the whois QR, and this is Owen, excuse me, the registrar is able to provide that on whatever date it was, they did receive the required verification for that information.
Okay, so you have found that at this point in time, Alan Greenberg speaking again, this point in time, there are no more of the embarrassing situations where a domain goes down validly and then comes back up with still wrong whois information. That's essentially non-existent.
Owen, in that is, we put this in place to avoid situations like that, and that was something that came from ALAC. But we continue to run this ongoing, it's something that we may even run again, but it is an ongoing process that we have now.
Okay, thank you very much, Alan, again. My recollection is the new registry agreements have terms in them that once a certain percentage of registrars that they use have signed on to the 2013 agreement, that within a certain period of time, all of them do. There's a number, I think one or two 270-day delays. Where are we right now where we will be able to effectively stop saying someone is still on the 2009 RAA?
I don't have the answer to that. Alan, would you know?
And that was Maggie for the transcript.
Yeah, so this is Alan Grogan. So I'm not entirely sure I understand the question. So signatories to the to the new GTLD agreements are required to use registrars who are signatories to the 2013 RAA. The legacy TLDs, the non-signatories to the 2013 RAA, are not required to do that. So there could continue to be registrars under the 2009 RAA for legacy TLDs.
It's Alan speaking. I believe for any of the legacy ones that have been re-signed again recently, such as .org, there is a provision which includes some delays but also requires them to eventually move.
So this is Alan Grogan again. Off the top of my head, I don't remember, but I could find that out.
Thank you very much. Heidi is asking whether it's an action item. Perhaps, yes. The action item is to find clarification on this topic. And you'll have to check afterwards on the exact wording of it. Evan Nibovich, please.
Hi. What is the anticipated cost to a complainant that has to file something through the PICDRP?
So this is Alan Grogan again. I'll take that. I don't know that we can predict what the cost would be. I mean, because there are a lot of different forks in the road in a PICDRP. It could be resolved simply informally between the complaining party and the registrar. It could be a matter that ends up going to ICANN compliance. It could be a matter that's referred to a panel. It could be a matter that is referred to a panel, a decision is made, and it eventually goes to mediation arbitration. So there's a wide range. I think our hope would be that the PICDRP process leads to rapid, quick, and cheap resolution of the issues.
I only make the comment because getting into the PICDRP at the beginning entails a cost. So I'm just wondering, from a purpose of public education, so if somebody believes they've been wronged through what they believe to be a breach of the PIC, what are their processes and how can they be informed of what this is going to cost them in order to launch the complaint? That's, you know, if there's so many unknowns, this could be a barrier to entry in terms of somebody launching a complaint. So I'm wondering if there's any opportunity for clarity for talking to the public on what's involved in doing this and what are the potential costs. Even if there's something like, here's the minimum it's going to cost to get involved in this. And it could be, you know, certently there's precedent, certainly there's examples that can be used to try and demonstrate what the likely or even just the minimum or what the range of costs would be to get into this process.
So this is Alan Grogan again. So if you're just talking about the cost of initiating a PICDRP, I think the cost is probably minimal. It's a matter of filing an online report complaint, identifying the PIC that you believe has been violated and the facts surrounding the violation, and that essentially kicks off the PICDRP process. And that could lead to a quick resolution, or it could go on for a longer period of time.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. I'm just saying I'm letting the discussion go as we're still waiting for Stefan Van Gelder, who is the chair of the nominating committee. That's the session immediately afterwards. But Maggie has told me we have a time limit as well. So if you wish to pursue, Evan Nibovich.
Sorry, just as a matter of clarification, as long as this information is made clearly on the website, to just try and give as much certainty as possible to people that are coming in that believe they've been wronged by something that can be resolved through this process, how much clarity can we give potential complainants about what's involved in doing this? That's all I'm really trying to drill down to, is to give some kind of idea in plain language to somebody that believes they've been wronged in such a way that requires the PICDRP process. What are they going to go through should they proceed? All I'm asking for is that this kind of clarity be provided at a public level, at an accessible level. Thanks.
So this is Alan Grogan again. I understand what you're asking for. Let us take that back and take it under advisement. Real quickly, just so I'm here, since I'm here, I am Alan Grogan. I'm the new Chief Contractor Compliance Officer. I will have Maggie's team reporting to me, as well as a newly formed position that's a Consumer Safeguards Director. In response partly to your comments, Holly, I think we've always viewed that a number of the safeguards built into the agreements are really for the protection of consumers in the internet community, not just registrars and registrants. That's the reason there are provisions dealing with things like malware and viruses and so forth. So one of my tasks is going to be to think about what we can do to specifically focus on and enhance consumer safeguards in connection with these agreements, and potentially where the agreements are insufficient to address some of those concerns, are there other ways we could address that that's consistent with our limited mandate and mission and consistent with our core values? Could we publish best practices to help help self-police the industry and so forth?
Thank you very much. We have John Laprise next.
John Laprise from Norello, speaking for the record. So thank you, Alan, for coming and speaking with us today. Can I ask one question? Why is, as a part of your title, you are in charge of consumer protection rather than user protection? It seems if we want to be really inclusive to everyone who is part of the internet, that we want to be as broadly as inclusive as possible. And the consumer as a, for some, has a certain connotation that user lacks. Or user's more open. Do you have any thoughts on that?
So Alan Grogan again. So we considered and discussed a whole variety of titles, and I'm not sure I can reconstruct exactly what the semantic discussion was that led to the current title. I think you could debate which one is broader, right? Because users might be limited to internet users or users of our services, and consumers might even be broader than that. So I'm not sure. I don't think you should read too much into that distinction.
Yeah, thank you very much, Alan. There are more than 3 billion internet users, so that,
right.
That's large enough, probably.
Right. Real quick, also, I will be speaking to the ALAC leadership team on Friday, so for those of you who will be here then, you'll have an opportunity to talk to me then, too.
Thank you very much. Holly, since you will be in the ALAC leadership team, can we...
But
go ahead, Holly. Last question, quickly,
thank you.
Please. And then you'll have to deal with Stefan and with Cheryl if you
waste
time.
That's all right. I'm brave. Next time, could we have a briefing? And because I think there are probably a lot of heads around the room that would like to contribute to and help you define what it is that we would like to see from you, and that's broader than just the team.
So, Alan Grogan again, yes, absolutely. About 24 hours ago that I was appointed to this position, so I didn't have time to prepare a briefing for this one, but next time I will.
Thank you very much, Alan. Finally, last words, Maggie Sarrett.
So, Maggie, for the record, I want to say thank you for this opportunity, and I want to also congratulate Alan. Looking forward to working with you in the future, and good luck this week.
Thanks very much, everyone. And as people come out of the chairs, we now have Stefan van Gelder, the chair of the ICANN nominating committee. We also have Cheryl Langdonor, one of the vice chair, and I think we have Irio Lansipur also will be joining us at the table.
This is my card.
Welcome, Stefan. Welcome, Stefan. Yes, we have to start. We have not a hard stop, but we've got a very short break at lunchtime, and then this room is being used. So we need to move forward.
So, Olivier, thank you. This is Stefan.
Ladies and gentlemen, your attention, please.
You got it now.
So that was Cheryl. This is Stefan van Gelder. Thanks for having us. We have a set of slides, but as we are short on time, and I'm sure it's more of more benefit to you to have a conversation with us, it's certainly of more benefit to us to have a conversation with you and understand or answer some of the questions you may have. Can I just start by introducing the people that are with me at the table? At the far left here, I have Juro Lansipuro, who was the 2013 chair, 2014 associate chair, and is a member of the 2015 committee. Just next to him, Ron Andruff, a member of 2013 and 14 committees, and just been appointed chair-elect of the 2015 committee. Just next to him, Cheryl Langdonor, who you obviously all know very well, associate chair-elect, I'll get it right. Chair-elect, by the end of the day, of the 2013 committee, chair of 2014, and my associate chair for 2015. Thank you for accepting that role, Cheryl, and passing that experience on to me is very much appreciated. I was a member of the 2013 committee, selected by the board to be 2014 chair-elect, and I'm now 2015 chair. That being done, I just want to go to one slide, which is the slide showing who we are recruiting for in 2015, please, and that you will find that two or three slides down. And perhaps just leave that slide up there. There's no point in me going through, or maybe I just, it's very quick, so I'll just go through it. It's a slide further on, please. We are recruiting for three members of the board in 2015, three members of ALAC, and that's...
slide, please.
Yeah, it's next slide. One more.
Thank you.
Perfect, thank you. Three members of ALAC, one from Africa, Asia-Pac, and Latin America, two members of the GNSO Council, and one member of the CCNSO Council. You have the terms up there on the slides. With that, can I just, Olivier, open it up for questions? And before doing that, perhaps just hand the mic over to Cheryl, Ron, and Juro in case they want to say anything.
Thank you very much, Stefan. Over to Cheryl.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Cheryl Langdonor for the transcript record. And I think this is a good idea to just have more of an iterative process today. You as a community have been very, very engaged in nominating committee world. You know you send regionally five members to sit on the nominating committee. Many of you have served on nominating committees, and you do realise that there is always the pressure of time. And this year coming, I'm hoping that they'll have a little bit more time than this year now closing had. We had the shortest amount of time, I think, on record to do our appointments, and we did a revamp of our site and our process of appointments. So this coming year, we have made some proposals from 2014 to hopefully have 2015 NomCom take these up and perhaps modify them slightly. But what we're hoping is that where there were some minor points of confusion and glitches, and Jimmy, you probably noticed, you did have to remember to take the next page step in that SOI process, which we've made it easier. We don't think we'll have as many "have I finished yet" questions. So there's a little bit of work still happening. It's all about making it more transparent and keeping up the accountability. But I just wanted to say one thing to you as ALAC, and now start thinking about it, because this is what we want to hear back from you. And that is, we're sending you in this coming year three members. You do need to think about giving us a good, clear brief for what you're looking at. Over to you, Ron.
Thank you. Thank you, Cheryl. Good afternoon, or good morning, good afternoon. I'm not sure what it is to everyone. I just wanted to say a few words about the representatives that you've sent to to the nominating committee. I've had the pleasure and the honor of serving 2 years as a member, and so I've served with a number of your colleagues. And this past year, the leadership team determined that it would be advisable to do a peer review. So you may not be aware of this, but shortly a peer review will be released, of which basically is a scorecard, if you will, of all of the members of the nominating committee rating each and every one of their fellow colleagues. And the purpose of that is really to up the game and to try to make sure that the sending organizations are completely informed as to the quality of the representatives that they sent, and also with the hope that that will encourage every sending organization to send their brightest and best to the nominating committee. So I would take my hat off to the colleagues. As I look around the table, I've worked with many of you over the years, Sirenush and Mr. McKnight over there, and you know, many, many of you. So rather than going around naming you all, congratulations for the great work you've done so far, and thank you for that. And the report cards will, or the peer reviews will be out shortly, so you can see how the other committee members felt about your members' collaboration. Thank you.
Well, I think that everything pretty much has been already said, and I'd like you all to attend, if possible, tomorrow, the board working group session on nominating committee, because it's pretty decisive for the future of the nominating committee, what kind of community response their final report will get. You know my personal thinking from my comments on the Wiki page, so I don't need to go there, but I just urge you to participate. Thank you.
No, they've got me. They've got me sorted. Just Cheryl again for the transcript record. I just wanted to mention with the peer review that we have in fact already published, or will be, it is in our 2014 final report, which may or may not be on the websites already. I'm not sure when they go live, but it is presented to the community this week at our public meeting. And in that report is an aggregated peer review already. So what you will be able to see is the average scores on all the different questions that all of, so there's a good snapshot that if you want to look at even now before we send the material out to the sending organisations, you've already got some graphics in your hand. Over to you, Stefan.
Thanks. 8 minutes left. I suggest we just open it up, questions. Olivier, if you're okay with that for questions. And Alan looks like he's got his hand up.
Thank you. Regarding the...
Yeah.
Thank you. Alan Greenberg speaking again. There's always a tendency in such reviews to not want to say negative things about your peers, even if it's a secret one. From the view of the chair, do you feel that the final appraisals were moderately accurate and you're comfortable with them?
I'm Cheryl Langdonor for the record. I'm more than happy to get this. Two parts to my response. I'll take the second part first, the second part of your question first. I have not a microsecond's worth of doubt that it is a true and accurate record of what I have seen to be a team that have worked collegially and effectively throughout a very hard year. In fact, if I was giving them some of the scores, I may have scored some of them higher. So that
put that to rest. In terms of not saying brutally honest things, you should go on site and read Stefan and Meyer's external reviews, which were not an internal review, but one done by a third-party company, the same group that do the ICANN board. And we are at a loss to know where some of the things, where we should improve, where I should improve, came from. There's statements in there such as, you know, how aggressive I was once to him. Poor boy, he couldn't handle it.
You notice I haven't said a word since I've sat down.
but believe me, there is no holding back. And what is important, I think, is the choice that Stefan and I have made this year, and that is to publish what has been last year started, which is a 360 review of ourselves.
So that's absolutely. That's the point I wanted. Sorry, Alan, you wanted to come back.
No, I was just going to... Alan Greenberg speaking. You mentioned the external review. We should go see it. It is posted somewhere?
Yes. That's the thing I wanted to... Yeah. There's two things I wanted to add. The first is that this is an unprecedented... a new development. and something that's not been done before. And I think it's important that... The leadership of the 2014 NOMCOM, Cheryl and myself, have the leadership that's selected by the board. Yes. We should not forget Euro, but Euro is selected as chair, associate chair, by the chair, Cheryl. So there's only two positions that can chair within the NOMCOM bylaws. That may be an important thing to highlight, the chair-elect and the chair. And those positions are reviewed by the board. The board has decided that there should be a review, and they've asked an external reviewer to do it. We, both of us, in full agreement, decided this year that that would be transparent. We did so before we saw the results. We announced it publicly, which in a moment of madness before we saw the results, it was my fault. I was trying to get re-elected at the time, and so that's one thing. The other thing I wanted to say is that the decision to do the internal reviews is Cheryl's and the 2014 committees. All decisions are committee decisions. They are collegial. Each committee makes up its own rules. I hope this will continue in 2015. I think it's a very important development, and I think it shows that the NOMCOM is committed to being fully transparent and accountable to you, the community, who are sending us people and helping us do this important job.
Thank you very much. I have a question, actually. When does the application period start for positions? Because it's not mentioned anywhere, and the website is not updated.
The 2015 website will be online soon. The reason it's not specifically mentioned as a date is that it's a decision the 2015 committee takes, and that committee starts work this Friday, and it will be working for two full days at the end of this week, so the 2015 members already get a taste of what they can expect in terms of the hard work. I can give you a general window, which is from December to April should be the window of opportunity to apply. And we do have a slide. I don't know who's running the slides. There is a slide showing that generic timeline if you want to put it up there.
Backwards to the flowchart. Back.
Yeah, thank you, Olivier speaking. And I guess the NOMCOM pages need to be updated then, because there is nothing mentioning the 2015. At the moment, in fact, it just says application period closed on the 1st of April 2014.
Yeah, that's what I've just said. The 2015 NOMCOM will be online soon.
It's not. The whole NOMCOM will be online, or just the...
They're entirely separate pages. That's a 2014 page that will be archived. The 2015 page will be launched when there is a 2015 NOMCOM. Right? So as handover happens, then you can expect new material. Stand up.
Vanda, for the record, just to recognize that the review of 360 was posted for everybody to see, and our group also was reviewed by the peers. So everyone can see our performance and so on. So that's very, very important, and I believe it will continue and will never stop, because this is real, whatever the results are. Yeah, but anyway.
Thank you, Vanda, and I think the community should be pleased that we're working on this. Evan?
My question is actually about the nature of the criteria and what you're looking for, as opposed to the review. Are you done with talking with the review? Okay. All right. The normal time when you come and talk to us, it has to do with what you're looking for, what the criteria are, and so on. Normally, when you're looking, especially, for instance, to fill the board position, there's certain specific talents, certain specific geography, certain specific things you're looking for. Could you go into a bit of detail going forward what it is you're looking for, so we as a community trying to help you find people have a better idea where to concentrate?
Thanks, Evan. Actually, I'm going to turn that round. The way it works is you tell us what skill sets you need, and we try and fill those skill sets. And you're absolutely right. That is, we are slightly remiss because we've taken up time on other things. But that is a very important part of the reason why we're here today representing the 2015 committee, is that we're here also to ask you as a community, please do send us your skill sets. What do you need? We've shown you the three positions we're recruiting for. You know the other positions that are in ALAC. What skill sets do you need to be filled? And please do send that to us. We ask each of the groups that we recruit for those skill sets. They are published when we get them. So if you go on the 2014 page, you'll see the skill set for the board members, and we act upon that. So please do get together and send us that info. Thanks.
Cheryl, for the record, just to follow on from Stefan, we get the information, of course, from each of the individual groups. But you also asked about the geography. We have, as of today, during our learnings, talking to people. I believe Stefan is going to ensure that there is a chart that shows which of the board members that are NOMCOM appointed, whose terms will be looking for replacement. Not that they have to be replaced, but their terms end in this next coming year. But just so you know, it is George, it is Olga, and it is Gonzalez. Okay, so we have, to give you a sense of the geography, okay? Right? So that's important. But we get from the board what the board believe are their particular skill set requirements, but they get added on to the general ones, and they're always published on the website.
It's Ron Anders speaking. And one other footnote to that, apart from what the nominating committee is tasked to do, there will also be other replacements from ASO and other bodies. So we will certainly have that on our mind, in so much as when we look at the when the final selections are taken, it's always to create a holistic board that all bases are covered. And I think that's one of the trickiest parts for the applicants, because they put their name in and they feel that they have the capability to be on the board, and quite frankly they probably would in another circumstance, because we now need someone who's more technically minded or more finance, whatever it might be, and that's one of the issues that we deal with. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's Olivier speaking. We have to finish because we've got Lac Rallo and the whole thing. So, yeah, Cheryl?
No, I was just going to say, don't forget, use your representatives into the NOMCOM. Brief your five people. Make sure you, as ALAC and at-large leaders, Rallo leaders, talk to your NOMCOM people and send the information through to us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Cheryl. Olivier Crépin-Leblanc speaking. And just for the record, our NOMCOM delegates are Fatima Tasseyesela, Satish Babu, Yero Lansipuro, Sylvia Herlane Lite, and Louis Hull. So you know who they are. Go and speak to them. They're all here. Yep. And thank you very much, Stefan. And no doubt we'll be speaking to you in the future again. And we'll be complaining about your selections or be praising you. But we won't forget the skill sets, certainly. And with this, this ends our morning session, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks to the interpreters and to the technical people for having fixed our microphone system. In 5 minutes, Lac Rallo meeting starts in this very location. So we'll have to do a quick turnover. Please respect Lac Rallo. Rallo for the time that they have. It's a back-to-back session with more sessions afterwards. So thanks and good morning. Well, good afternoon, everyone. And, bye-bye.
And it's Alan. You may want to avoid this side of the table. The power isn't working.